for the time we can spend together today again. We ask your spirit speak to our hearts. Help us understand the things we must. In Jesus' name, amen. You know, again, Christianity is not very difficult to understand. We make it difficult, just like the tax code. You know, it's not difficult to realize if you make money, you need to send a certain amount to the government. How hard is that? Well, read the tax code sometime, see what we've made it into. We've made it into a very complicated thing where we have to hire people to figure it out for us because we can't even figure it out. And we do that to everything. Well, the Pharisees did that to the law. All of a sudden, there was a Talmud. They started to explain everything in greater detail than necessary. You know, and we have to be careful that we actually define words the way they are. Some of you are doing this little fun exercise up here in the box. I have no idea what that's called. It's called make yourself feel bad game. And there's not much to it. I did tell you, though, that if you're going to do that and experience like you should, you don't look over the top. Because once you do that, your brain picks up the image, and now it doesn't count. You can do it blindfolded. You're really trying to get the image through the mirror. Now, what's interesting is when you see the image in the mirror, what are you seeing exactly? Backwards, right? Upside down. Now, the image is there, and it happens to be a star, so, you know, this star will look like a star no matter what I do to it. And what's interesting is that's how so many of us understand the world. We really don't understand it the way God made it. We don't see it clearly, but we see it through the mirror. So everything's a little upside down and backwards, and then we're trying to stay in the lines. We can't figure out why we can't. Well, it's because you're looking at a mirror, actually. What we need to do, what's funny is God even said that. For now, you see in a mirror. So everything on earth is somewhat backwards and upside down, and yet that's our reality to us. And what your brain was doing, those of you that did it, was struggling to try and stay in the reality. And eventually you could get it. Now again, those who peered over the top first, you can see how your brain would adjust and even take over. It's kind of like being in God's Word, knowing the truth, seeing it clearly. Eventually, you can operate in the context of that truth, and that's good. And so as we go through different topics, you got to keep seeing, okay, I don't understand that, or that doesn't make any sense, or maybe I do get it academically, but I don't really believe it. We always have to understand that our belief system is kind of worthless. Our belief doesn't mean anything when it comes to truth. You can believe whatever you want, and it has no bearing on truth. See, truth already is there, and what you want to do is strive to understand what the truth is and believe the truth. That's what you want. But regardless of whether you do or not, it is still there. I want to continue on why we're important. We're not important, again, because we're blobs of accidental protoplasm that got planted on the earth. That has nothing to do with our importance. Our importance has to do with the fact that we can be children of the King, that the Creator and Sustainer of life rearranged life for us. I was reading James this morning again, and the very, very strictness of James saying, when somebody comes into your assembly and they're wearing a gold ring, and you give them preferential treatment over the needy that come in, you are wrong. Why? Because we put a value on the gold ring. We put a value on the money. God doesn't. He puts a value on the faithfulness of the individual, not the money. See, poor people and rich people are going to be judged by the same criterion. What have you done with what you've been given? And if you haven't been given much, you're still going to be judged by what have you done with what you've been given. And if you've been given like a whole pile of stuff, you're going to be judged on what have you done with what you've been given. That's all. And again, we've simplified it. It's just not that hard to grasp. But we've made it hard. We've kind of written a tax code with it. Well, 10% if you're really rich, you know. But if you're really poor, you don't even need to give 10%. Really? How about we simplify that thing and say that God is the Creator and Sustainer of all life, and He owns it all, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're sick or healthy. See, I love the Scriptures because it simplifies everything. And when I go out in this world, you know, maybe I'm just an old football hockey player or something, but I can't grasp it. It's like, wow, that's really complicated, what you just did. I think it could be simpler. You know, when we look at doctrine, God's God, I'm Dave. When we look at man, I'm sinful, he's not. So, these are the simple things in life, but they have tremendous ramifications. I'm going to continue. Why is it important where you understand where your value comes from? You remember what the term blessed really means in Scripture. What does the term blessed mean? I mean, look at how Jesus uses it in Scripture. You know, who's the most blessed ever in Scripture, according to God? There was one woman who was blessed more than anybody else. Mary. Yeah, Mary. So, what was her life like, really? If you want to understand blessing, look at the mother of Jesus. Because nobody in history is blessed like she was, according to God's definition. What happened to her? When she was just a young girl, she got pregnant by the Holy Spirit. And of course, nobody believed that. She had to live with that stigma the whole time. In fact, Joseph didn't even believe it. He had to, one day, be wrestled down by God and told, no, really, that's what happened. Then she was no doubt cast out by many of her relatives and many of the people because they wouldn't believe it, and that just wasn't done in those days. In fact, people who would sleep around usually got taken out and killed. And she, finally, one day, they had to go do the census thing. She, you know, the picture we have is that she got on this donkey and they took her, but really in that culture, the women led the donkey, the guys rode. I'm just not sure how it really turned out, but I'm not sure in the Bible it tells us that she rode it necessarily. But it would have been opposite of what normally happens in that culture. Regardless of what happened, she's 9 months pregnant and told to go on a journey. I don't know. I remember when Linda was 9 months pregnant. No journeys are necessary. That is a difficult time right there. God is creative on what he does and how that works, but I'm telling you, you probably don't want to go real far walking or even on a donkey at that point. But she did. Then she goes into a town where all Joseph's relatives are. And nobody had room for her in the inn. I mean, most likely, when she went into town, she was in labor. We don't know that, we're guessing. She was looking for a place to give birth to this child. And she was with Joseph's extended family, relatives. Why is it that nobody showed her some grace and mercy? Well, probably, we don't know, but I'm guessing she was the little slut girl. We don't help little slut girls. So what happened to Joseph and Mary? They had to find a place because the time was now. And the only place they could find was a stable. That's better than nothing, I guess. Can you tell me where the blessing starts here? Is this our definition of blessed? Sure, God, I'd love to be misunderstood. I'd love to be uncomfortable. I would love to go and be rejected by my own relatives. I would love that. Bring it on. What a blessing. See, that's not how we would use the word. But it doesn't stop there. She gives birth, and there are some really cool things. I mean, the shepherds come by, and much later, the wise guys came by. And I mean, that was cool. But can you imagine watching Jesus grow up? All of a sudden, Mary and Joseph have to run for their lives. They have to hide Jesus. And Jesus grows up. I'm not sure what it was like to raise a perfect child. It's probably nerve-wracking. But then along the way, somewhere, Joseph disappears. No one really knows what happened to Joseph. He just disappears. Now, he could have been there and never mentioned. I don't know. It's just from the scriptures. It's like he's gone. What I've concluded, right or wrong, is that Mary was actually then a single mom. And again, I wouldn't stick on that one just because the Bible doesn't say that, but it doesn't say contrary to that, and Joseph's just missing. And then one day, Mary is standing at the foot of the cross watching her son get nailed there. For what reason? Because he healed the sick, made the blind see. Can you imagine being Jesus' mom and what she had to go through? Jesus told John to take care of her at the cross. That's our definition of blessing, by the way, right there. When you look at life, all of you you're going to want God to bless you. You're going to want to be blessed. But you have to remember what we've done to that word in our culture. We tend to think that those who have a lot of money and health and success and respect, they're the successful ones. When in reality, to be successful simply means that God has chosen to use you. And in that, you might get stoned or cut in half, or you might be rich, I don't know. But that doesn't have anything to do with it. It has to do with God choosing to use you. That's why the poor can be blessed. Why? Because in their life, they don't have anything to focus on other than God. They can't focus on what's going on in the investment world or, you know, they're not doing that. So God looks at it and goes, you know what? It's much more blessed for those who are poor because they don't have the temptation to spend forever just trying to rearrange their finances in that temporal world. You know, blessed are the weak. Why? Because they actually get it. They can't do it on their own. Oh, it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Why? Because they're so distracted with their riches. You see, what we find is that God defines blessing totally different than you and I do. And I really believe that you would be wise to look at what he says. Because the truth of the matter will be that down the road, you will only find significance and security in a very specific place. And that's in your relationship with God and as he uses you. And you know, it won't matter down the road whether you're rich or poor, I promise. It won't matter. What will matter is if you will be in a position where God will use you. And if he uses you, he may end up making you sick so you can speak to nurses and doctors. He may end up... See, it's the blessing of being used. Now, we don't like the term of being used. That's because we always are used by people who aren't God. When somebody uses you, you don't like that. Because what they did is they took advantage of you. Here's what happens. When God uses you, he doesn't take advantage of you. He gives you life. There's a whole different scenario that takes place. But we avoid people that use us. I promise you this. As God uses you, you will be significant and you will feel significant. See, he doesn't take from you and not give back. He knows how to fulfill you. So in American culture, I don't think that you and I, if we look at the American culture we're in, I think we would say, yeah, but that's really not how American churches are, people are, and fundraisers are. No, you're right. They're not. Does that change anything that God said, though? See, through time, we've looked in the mirror, man. We got it all backwards and upside down. Truth of the matter probably is that there's some people today that are sitting in a nursing home that really can't do anything, but they pray. You know, before my mom died, she was all worried about just one little thing. She wanted to know who would pray for her Davy when she wasn't here. That was it. She told me that I came in her room once and she was always just sitting in a wheelchair, you know, doing nothing. And I came in there and I said, "What's up?" Well, she said, I'll tell you, but you're going to think, you know, it's a dumb question that I'm asking God. Hit me. I'm asking him if when I pray for you now, if he'll just stack them up. So when I'm gone, he can just take them off the pile. How do you respond to that? It was astonishing. I said, thanks, Mom. You think God responds to that? I guarantee he does. Now, I don't know if he's taking prayers off a pile. I don't think that loophole's in there. But I don't think I was looking at a loophole. I was looking at a heart. What was her purpose? She couldn't move. She couldn't take care of herself. She couldn't. I can pray. And she did. She was blessed. Oh, she couldn't move. She couldn't take care of herself. I understand that. But she was blessed. Are you trying to be blessed, or are you just living right and let the blessing take care of itself? You know, live and love God and love people and watch. Watch what happens. You will see that you are blessed. Luke 1:42, Elizabeth gave a glad cry and exclaimed, Mary, you are blessed by God above all other women. And your child is blessed. And I'm thinking both of those terms. Right there, you want to know blessing, look at that. Jesus, who by the way was the richest guy that ever really lived, because he owned it all. You know, it's funny, this little thing is going on in our country where we found that the richest 1% are controlling almost 50% of the wealth in the world. The reason it bothers people is because the rich people will take advantage of the poor. That doesn't happen with God. He owns it all, and he uses it for the people. See, that's different. And what's interesting is that the Jesus was called blessed, too. He gave up being rich. He gave up his position. He gave up. Why? Because he wanted someone to pat him on the back and say, look what I gave up. No. If you do that, don't bother. Because the richness faded. What was important to him? You and me. And in light of that, he gave up his richness. He gave up his position. He gave up his status for us. He was blessed. Don't you hope that someday you can look back on your life and see that your life actually mattered, that God actually used you? What if in our life we think that money is blessing, or free parking in a game is blessing, or, you know, I've heard that word blessed so much thrown around. I'm so blessed. And it always has to do with something going my way. I've never heard anyone say they're blessed when things go against them. And yet when I look at the Bible, Stephen, was he blessed? I would say so. The apostles, I think so. Daniel. Yeah, I would think so. Joseph? I think so. Now you say, well, yeah, Joseph ended up pretty good. Well, there are seasons in life. I hope you see that. I mean, there are times where things are real rough, and it seems like God just backs off. I mean, there are times in the ministry through the years where I felt like, God, I cannot take one more lousy thing that happens, and then one more lousy thing happens. You know, I remember once very specifically where my dad was, probably in college at the time, and he was here. And we had been sending kids into the hospital like every day, boom, just. And we do that regularly anyway, but it was getting way out of control. And so my dad came into the dining hall. It was over in the other place. He called all the staff out for a second. He said, look, we have got to stop this drive into the hospital every day. This is getting nuts. As he spoke, these two boys were chasing each other. One slipped, went face first into a rock pile, and the other one landed on top, and there's blood everywhere. And, of course, my dad just looked at it, and the rest of us just lost it. And, of course, that wasn't good for the child, because we're all rolling, laughing, while he's bleeding to death over here. But the truth of the matter was the timing was incredible. You know, sometimes you're not doing anything. I mean, these are two boys running after each other. One slipped and hit his face on a rock. And we were just being told, we can't take any more of this. It was like, yes, we can. Just happened. We're doing it. Someone had to take him into the hospital. You know, your blessing isn't going to be from comfort, I promise. It's not going to come from money, and it's not going to come from fame. It's not going to become, you know, look at our culture. If I say something, I say you're against like American Idol or something. No, you know what? I'm against the idea that we have to do that to be okay. I'm against the idea that people think if I could just get that $1 million contract, if everyone could see how good I am. See, that's what I'm against. It's like, I don't care if you sing good. I might enjoy it too. I don't know. But the bottom line really is we have to make an idol thing out of it. Is that what makes you blessed? There are people that really can't sing, and I tell you, they would be more blessed if their parents, while they're growing up, said, you can't sing, don't go on that show. Because you wonder, in the world, is there anybody telling these people the truth sometimes? I heard a Christian psychologist the other day talking actually about that, saying that your generation craves lies. So here's what happens. You sing a song at home, and grandma walks in and goes, that's like the best song I ever heard anybody sing ever. Yeah. Pretty soon you're singing in front of American Idol and you stink. And they're the first people in the world that said you stink. You see, what happens is you're really blessed if while you grow up you have someone that can affirm you but tell you the truth. Not somebody that lies to you. Because what's going to happen in the real world out there, you're going to find out who lied to you. You can go out there and go, you know what? Everybody, wherever I sing, they tap their foot and they think, whoa. And then they go and sing in front of the judge and they're going, huh? How'd that happen? Because nobody was your friend. Nobody told you you can't sing because how could they after everybody told you you were better than anyone else in the world at singing? You begin to believe it. Sometimes I'll sit in church and I lean over to Linda, who is a musician. I am not a musician. I can't tell you. No, I don't know if anybody's good or bad. But every once in a while I hear someone and I actually, this is the question I ask Linda. Are they any good? She knows what I mean by that. It's like, I'm picking up they're not too good. However, I don't know music. I'm just picking it up. And she just smiles and doesn't say anything. You see, I'm thinking, why didn't somebody tell this person they shouldn't be in front of church embarrassing themselves? And then at the end, everyone claps like they were just the best musician that ever lived. And I'm thinking, oof, this person's living a lie. Who's going to tell them down the road that they don't have a career in music? And when they do, they'll be cast as unchristian, unkind, not very nice people. I remember I took 5 years of piano lessons, and I still can't play. One day, my dad came downstairs, and I was supposed to be practicing. Instead, I was taking a pencil, and I found if you fling it real quick, you can break the ivory little keys, just chipping. So I was chipping keys. He came down and said, I don't think this is your thing. No, I don't think so. He goes, we're not doing it anymore. Okay. Quit then, never played again. You see, it's okay to say, I don't think this is for you. Oh, it's not okay. Try it. Go ahead and take lessons, whatever. You can. But somebody along the line, you know, I'm not an artist. I've said that to you. Some of you that are, I admire very much because I wish I could be. But it was my dad who basically said, nah, I don't think so. You know, you can't even stay in the lines. Just, no. Baseball player, I told you about that one. You know, it was good for me to be cut from a no-cut team because it just doesn't keep your fantasy going very well. I used to love my coaches because they were truthful. See, you're blessed in life when somebody tells you the absolute truth and they love you because they want you to do something well. You know, my goal for you is not to patronize you and make you feel good about something you're not good at. My goal is to help you find out what body part you are and start excelling there. You know, the one thing my dad did tell me, I wasn't a builder, I told you. I wasn't really one who did a lot of that stuff. But one day he came up to me and said, you know what, I think you can really teach. What direction did I head in? See, I had someone that was honest with me along the way. Don't become a builder. No one will go in your houses. Don't be a musician. Why? Because I'm trying to crush your little spirit. No, because really, you're not very good at it. You don't even tap your foot when you play. Don't be an artist. Dad, I'm running out of things. Well, you can carry shingles. You know, and there's nothing wrong with carrying shingles. There really isn't. Somebody's got to carry him from the ground to the top. That's the way it is. And he would have told you, you're fine doing that. And not only that, you're good doing that. But then when I started teaching, not only did I love it, but all of a sudden it was, no, that's it, right there. See, I don't have to be a business guy. I don't have to be that. There are plenty of those out there. Be careful what you get that blessing from and who talks to you about it. Matthew 16:17, Jesus replied, you are blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You did not learn from a human. Why is John blessed? Because God actually spoke to his heart about something. When the God of the universe speaks to your heart, you're blessed. You are blessed. See, now, can you do that to poor people? Yeah. Can you do it to rich people? Uh-huh. Can you do it to, like, in-between people? Yeah. Doesn't matter. See, the money is not the issue. God says you're blessed. We're trying to build a profile for the word blessed. Psalm 1:1-3, oh, the joys of those who do not follow the advice of the wicked or stand around with sinners or join in with scoffers, but they delight in doing everything the Lord wants. Day and night they think about his law. Now let me, I know we don't use like the word delight very much, like, ooh, I delighted in this today. I mean, we don't do that in our culture. But you know what it means. When's the last time you delighted in God? What God's saying is, you know what? These people who delight in me, there's this tremendous satisfaction that comes out of life. Again, this morning as I was meeting with God, I was on the verge of tears, which isn't that unusual, but it's just, I was thinking, God, look what you're doing. Look what you're doing. We're still open. There's still close to $6,000 a day that are paying the bill. We're still here. And I don't know how to keep that going, God, you know that. But we're here. See, as I was delighting in the Lord, I was also enjoying the life he gave me, and I feel like the most blessed person that ever walked the face of the earth. In fact, my conversation with him as I was sitting on my couch working on some things was, God, thanks so much for giving me the front seat, man. You know, I got to see this very clearly, so thank you. And that's important for us to see. That's the blessing. Not the fact that I got in on what he was doing. And then it says, they're like trees planted along the riverbank, bearing fruit each season without fail. Their leaves never wither, and all they do, they prosper. You know what's really interesting about that, again, is the idea that no matter what the circumstances of life, these people do well. Because when you look at a tree, you're thinking, well, in order for it to do well, it needs water, that kind of stuff. It says, look, even like trees that are planted by a riverbank in a drought, in hard times, they have what it takes to still get the moisture and the nutrients they need, and they will still do well. Those people who really know God, they do well no matter if they're sick or tired or poor, they do well. Mary, she's rejected. She had nobody but Joseph. I mean, she did well. Because doing well means just being close to God and listening to him. And anybody can do that. Then the king will say to those on my right, come, you are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Come. You know who's blessed? Those who basically have loved God and walked with him. And one day God says, look, I got a place for you, man. I've been thinking about you while you're down on earth. You know, I'm promising you that the day you close your eyes on this earth, when you open them and see him, you're going to want to hear that. You're going to want to hear, well done, you're going to want to hear, look, man, I've been thinking about you, and you know what, I knew you liked this. People talk about living by rivers and streams. I'm not a lake person or a water person, I'm a forest person. I want to live in the middle of God's jungle. Now, he may not have a jungle, I understand. But you know what, it doesn't really matter, he knows. He might even be talking to me saying, you know what, Dave, I really made you, and you didn't even know what, I got this prepared for you, and this is what you really like. I know that because I made you. It's important that we understand. Luke 11:28, he replied, but even more blessed are those who hear the word of God and put it to practice. Blessed are those who hear and do something with it. Think about how many times in the evangelical world you have heard a message, you've heard something said, and that was satisfying enough, but you didn't do anything with it. You're not blessed. What good is it to know something and not do it? In fact, when disaster strikes you because you didn't do what you knew you should do, it's going to be all that much worse. Because you sit there and go, I knew I shouldn't do it. Last summer, I sliced my finger. And of course, I told Linda, it does not need stitches just because it's like 3 miles deep and the bone showing and I'm bleeding all over. So I just put a piece of tape on it. She goes, what's that? And I said, just a little bit of blood. Let me see it. Dave, you need stitches. No, really, it's just it's a finger. My modeling days are over. It can scar. No, that's a little deep. So I went and asked the experts over here, and I said, you need stitches. And I hate when that happens. And you know why I hate it even worse? Because I knew better. I was actually putting a little cover on a razor blade thing and doing it all wrong. And I know you don't do that. And I did it anyway. And it did slip and cut my finger. And I thought, what an idiot. That bothered me worse than getting cut. Because I knew better and I did it. Same thing with a fly fish hook once. I was warned. I was out learning how to fly fish. I don't know how many know how to fly fish, but it's, you know, it's numbers, little hoity-toity things. And you're not supposed to get lazy and let that elbow drop. Let's do this, not this. Well, I was getting tired of this. So my elbow got lower and lower and lower. Pretty soon I hooked myself right in the back of the neck with that stupid little fly. And I went, ugh. And the guy with me said, did I tell you to keep your elbow up? Yeah, but I was tired. That's what happens when you don't keep your elbow up. Fine. Now, would you pull it out? He said, no. Really, I mean to pull it out. Nope. I'm not pulling it out. That's going to hurt. Fine. So I came back here, found Lauren. Would you pull it out? No. It's in just the thick of the neck there, right? And the barb was in there. And you have to push it through, cut it, and pull it out. No one wanted to do that. I went home. Linda, could you please? No. I couldn't find anybody to pull that out. Do you mean I have to go to the hospital with this thing in my neck? Yes. You know, it didn't bother me. I could have been like a pierced ear for all I care. Could have left it there. But what really bothered me was the fact that I knew better and did it anyway and got this. When I got to the hospital, they just giggled. Pulled it out in about 30 seconds. I went back and said, no way. We put it on the board with all the other dumb guys that come in here. Look at all those hooks. So they're a little collection of stupid fisher people. Fine, you can keep the hook. Just don't put my name on it. You see, it's not that you will never make mistakes. It's that you know better. You do what you know you shouldn't do. You suffer the consequences. Who have you got to blame? I couldn't even blame the guy teaching me because he was very clear not to do that. It's not that we won't have accidents, but God says in the no duh comment of the world, you're going to be blessed if you actually do what you know you should do. Look, I'm coming soon. Blessed are those who obey the prophecy written in the scroll. See, again, blessed are those who obey it. Not just know it, but obey it. You know, what I would encourage all of you to do is have this fire in your gut so that when you learn something, you do not just leave it sit there. You learn something, you have to do something with it. Remember we were talking about the importance of the lake kind of illustration? You got the flow in the lake, the flow out of the lake. Very important in all of life. So this morning, as I was working through the book of James, before you know it, I'm writing these papers on it, I'm sending Twitter tweets on it, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, everything. Why? Because I want to do something with it. It's important that I don't just sit there and go, that's nice, get up, leave, and forget I ever did anything. Forget I thought anything. Now, I need to adjust my life according to what it says. And that's what's being said here. It's very, very easy to understand. If God says something, you will be blessed if you do it. You say, well, I'm not legalistic. No, that's not legalism. That's wise. Legalism is when you do it because you want to look good to God. He already knows what you look like. Don't bother. Wisdom is, you're God, I'm Dave, I'm listening. See, that's different. You say, well, then you put a bunch of rules. No. You know, again, you're going to write the Talmud or the tax code or something. Because the bottom line is, I have it real easy. There's a movie on. There's words that don't honor God. There's scenes that don't. I'm not going. Why? I only got one rule, honor God. That one doesn't. I'm not going. You say, well, that's not legalism. That's wisdom. Legalism is there's four curse words, there's three sex scenes. Yep, I always go if there's not five and six sex scenes. What are you talking about? Because all of you do have to have a criterion. You do. There's a point where the movie crossed the line, you're not going. Well, what if it is 100% purity thing? What if it's, you know, whatsoever is true, whatsoever is right, whatsoever no. What if that's how you judge it? See, for me, that's not rewriting anything. That's just the responding to what God said. Whereas those that don't do that, you are the legalist. It's the new legalism that nobody recognizes. Because it's basically saying, I can do this, I can do that, I can do this, only this much. And now I got to write down what that means, and I got to figure it all out. Boy, that's tiring. It's a whole lot easier to just say, I'm going to do what's best. And it's really not that hard. See, then in Acts 20 it says, and I have been a constant example of how you can help the poor by working hard. You should remember the words of the Lord Jesus. It is more blessed to give than receive. You know, God said this. It's more blessed to give. We love receiving. We do. God says, you're not wired that way. You're wired to give. I would promise you this. One day, you will love somebody enough where giving them something is far more important than ever getting anything from them. And that's real important to see. You know, it's interesting. I think of our modern mission trips, and whenever I say this, you get accused of not being pro-mission trips. I love mission trips. I've seen them help people. I've seen people help. But here's what I also find out. That a lot of mission trips have, you know, very little concern for those who they're going to see. And people are willing to go on them as long as it doesn't cost them anything. Somebody else pays for it. That's great. You know, I had a guy that said, I want to go on a mission trip. What do you think? I said, go and earn the money yourself before you go. Oh, you don't want to help? Oh, you don't know how much I want to help. The problem is very simple. You're willing to go to a people who you don't know and help them in a way you don't even know. And if you go 5 years later, after you come back, probably nothing has changed. And not only that, after you come back, after 5 years, probably nothing has changed in your life either. And you've had no investment in it at all. That's somebody else who invested it. Now, Paul, he had a great investment in what he did. No, he didn't. He wouldn't even take money from people. He made his own tents. You know how easy it is for us to just tell other people, I'm doing something real noble, make sure I have the money to do it. And then, well, again, do we do that? I think we do. I think we need to help those who actually are going to help somebody and they don't have the resources to do it. But that's where hopefully God's got to give wisdom to his children on who to help and who not to help. There are others who possibly should just save their own money. See, in America, we could do that if we want. I mean, we have a lot of money. So, you know, you can eat cheaper and you can do things cheaper and just start putting stuff in a bank and say, here's my account for someday when I go on a mission trip, I'll be able to pay for it. What you find in life, honestly, is when you do that, it's you giving and not somebody else. And it's more blessed to give than receive. When you give, you say, well, it's my labor, it's my, you know what, in America, going on a mission trip, a lot of people come back and they say this. I don't know if it really helped them, but it was sure good for me. See, that's how we do it. It's like, it's still about me, not them. And you know, here's the hard part when you say that. I do think that if you go and you love God and you do everything right that way, you will benefit. So if you could come back and say, well, that was really good for me. You could, and that could be all legit. But there's a lot that just basically say, well, whether it was good for them doesn't matter because it was really good for me. And that's very American. So I used your money so I wouldn't have to use mine. And I enjoyed my time away and it was good for me. Well, I don't know. That picture doesn't seem to work. When Jesus says especially, it's more blessed to give than receive. You are blessed because you believed what the Lord would do, what he said, that he would do what he said. See, you're blessed when you just believe God's faithful. That's all. And I heard a voice from heaven saying, write this down. Blessed are those who die in the Lord from now on. So those who die in the Lord, they're blessed. You know, those who have gone to my dad, my mom, Berta, you know, fill in the blank, whoever you know, they're blessed. Why? Because they're out of the war zone. There's a guy here this weekend who, you might have seen him, big guy with a gun, got a big gun. He's a federal agent, so he always has to have the gun. I tell you, I admire his heart. He loves protecting people. He really does. He talks about with a fervor, protecting people. He doesn't like blowing people away. He likes protecting people. See, that's different. And sometimes, unfortunately, you have to blow people away because they're bent on hurting somebody. And there's not much option. He's the kind of guy they send out, you know, to, he's a sniper at times, and he would go out and protect dignitaries and hide and watch for people pulling guns and bombs and get rid of them before the public ever knows about it. And talking to him, I said, you know what, I never really thought about the fact that you're out there risking your life so that I could have freedom and never even think about this. He said, yeah, there's a whole army of us out there doing that. There are people out there every day so that you and I would never, ever know that there's terrorists trying to kill somebody. They keep it quiet. It's interesting. In one way, I thanked him. I felt blessed because he was out there sacrificing his life so that I could enjoy my life. Now, I know he's not guarding me in particular. At least, I don't think he is. But he's an interesting guy. Oh, funny story, deviant, but funny. I mean, deviant from where we're going. He's got this gun that sticks out of his pants like the whole time, this big gun. And I asked him, so what if somebody grabs that? He goes, they get my full attention. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, I was in a bookstore once, and a guy said, hey, look at the gun. He grabbed it. I took him, broke his arm in three places. And then the police came and gave him a citation for a misdemeanor for touching the weapon of a federal officer. And then they gave him a fine. And then they put him in an ambulance and took him away. I said, that guy had a bad day. No doubt. He was being cute. What's this about? And he ended up with a broken arm, a citation, and a misdemeanor for touching a gun of a federal employee. It's interesting, though. This guy's heart is huge. You know what he's doing now? He's trying to take EMT courses because he's so tired of hurting people, he would like to do the other side of it. You know, he'd like to figure out, how can I do something else that isn't just damaging people? And yet he goes, I know I'm damaging them so that other people can live. What a dilemma, because we live in a fallen world that we have to have even people like that. Because technically, if we all lived according to how God wanted us to, when I look at you and you look at me, we're thinking, what do I need to do to make you the best you can be? See, now we don't need to protect anyone in that one. We live in a fallen world, and it's really much more fallen than you and I would ever believe. I heard a voice from heaven saying, write this down, blessed are those who die in the Lord from now on. Those who aren't with us, those who get to see it's over, that blessed are they. And the angel said, write this, blessed are those who are invited to the wedding feast of the Lamb. Those people are blessed. Blessed and holy are those who share in the first resurrection. See, the Bible is not silent on what it means to be blessed. The American church has just twisted it to mean money and health and fame. But that's not what it means. I love going through the Bible and defining words the way God defines them. Because it helps us then set things correctly. Otherwise, we do it as culture defines it, and we get a little off. You guys know the difference between being needed and wanted, and I've talked about it before, and that's critical. Because so often, what happens is we're messed up on how we feel about ourselves because we keep trying to be needed in this world. When the truth of the matter is, you're not. You say, well, that's very harsh. No, that's very good. The pressure of being needed is overwhelming. You are not made that way. Likewise, you know, my dad, I really thought, was a guy that if anybody would ever die, not him, because he was in charge of so many ministries. I mean, he was in charge of so many things. And then he died very quickly of a heart attack. And all of those things kept going on. See, I realized he wasn't needed to keep those on. But I wanted him to keep them on. He wasn't needed for me to live. I could go buy a sandwich still, get a cup of coffee, do that. I don't need him for that. I just wanted him with me. And years ago, Linda made that clear, as I've said to you before, that it's not me needing her that really counts. It's me wanting her that really counts. You see, in a relationship, it's not about need. It's about want. You want to share your life with somebody. You want to make their life better. You want to help them be the best. See, that's what you want. It's not about, you want a disastrous marriage someday. Make your marriage about you and your needs. You will have a disastrous marriage down the road. Because what will happen is you will manipulate things to make sure that your needs are met. When indeed nobody wants to be needed, and nobody really is, and in your head you know that. If I were to die today, Linda does not need me to continue her life. She would want me. She would want me to be around. Likewise, if she died today, I do not need her to continue. See, when you start acting in the realm of something that isn't, like need, you get warped everywhere. So in business today, what happens is a boss will come to somebody and say, you know, I could do this business without you, you're not needed. You know what the proper answer should be to that one? I know. The bosses of the world should want their employees, not need them. And they would do it a whole lot different. Because the biblical premise is that God, when he looks at Dave Wages and go, you know what, Dave? If you don't get up and do this today, I can't even make the sunrise. None of that happens. In fact, if I am a jerk today, I go and I say, I don't want to listen to God. I go, you know, punch people, do that kind of stuff. Really bad person. I go, I'm still God. I don't need you to do my work. I don't need you to represent me. I can do it without you. You see, once we start getting into that need thing, we start destroying what God made in relationship. It is actually fun to be wanted. As a dad, when I come home, if my girls would jump up and down and be real excited I'm home, whoa, that's cool. But then they get to an age, you come home and they go, that's nice. It's like, hey, get out here. I mean, that's nice. I want you to be a little excited when dad comes home. There's something precious about those little girls that just jump up and down when you come home. You see, I know they don't need me to grow up, and I know they don't have to have me there. But they want me there. Don't ever spend your time, I don't care whether it's a business or anything else, don't ever spend your time trying to be needed. There are some business places that actually believe you do things that nobody else knows and that kind of thing so that they can never fire you because then you are irreplaceable. That's a joke. You're never irreplaceable. Even the person who keeps the formula for Coke can be replaced. You know what I mean? You are not irreplaceable. Instead, because I believe that, instead I get to enjoy every day. Because I know that I'm not needed to do this job. Therefore, I'm wanted to. Therefore, I'm getting in on something. The pressure is not what it could be. Can you imagine if I felt like I had all the pressure for providing for all the needs? Whoa, I'm needed. I'm a real big shot. No, I'm not. I'm actually a little shot. It's my father who's the big shot. And he'll take care of things. You see, that to me is what's cool is being wanted. To what's cool for Linda is that she's wanted. And the minute I start acting like she's needed, your relationship starts to go downhill. Because that's not what it's about. The answer for hurting people who feel bad about themselves, if you're one of these hurting people, the question is, are you hurting enough to give up on yourself? Are you unhappy enough and miserable enough to turn away from yourself with all your problems and failures and seek relief in a relationship with the person of Jesus Christ. Many claim to be hurting, but they're not really hurting enough. You see, what happens a lot of times, we keep trying to find love in all the wrong places. We keep trying to find satisfaction and significance somewhere can't be found. We keep failing. We keep being miserable. And we go, that stinks. So we keep trying it more and more and more. And it keeps going, stink, stink, stink. Well, one day I'm going to find it. No, you won't. If you're trying to find it outside of Jesus, you're not going to find it. And again, I would challenge you. You don't believe me? Go try it. You'll find that I'm telling you the truth. I just hope you do it like this for a minute and not a lifetime. Because you will never find satisfaction in the temporal things that God has given you. Now, it does not mean that you won't find momentary satisfaction in some of the temporal things. If you really like hot dogs, when you bite into it, ooh, you're going to find a moment of pleasure. But you are not going to find satisfaction in life. Because if that porridge that you just ate is the only thing giving you satisfaction, then you're going to keep having to find porridge and wishing that you could get it without it. But you can't. Kind of like a monkey trying to grab a banana in a jar. You know, we believe the lies of the world. We've looked in the mirror. It's really sad to see the suicide rate in our country, especially in college age. Why are so many college kids killing themselves? Because they're getting to the point where they realize they believed a lie, but they don't know any way out of it. And rather than go on and live this hopeless life, I might as well just end it because there's no hope at all. And you know, if no one introduces them to God, I agree with them, there is no hope. Well, what's going to change? What's going to make it better without God? More money? More success? Demeaning others? Being the right sports fan? I mean, what's going to do it? We need to understand that. And in the end, we need to come to God and say, God, I'm going to be satisfied with being wanted by you and loving you and just listening to you. That's pretty simple. I am important, by the way, to God. And right now in my life, there was a time in my life, as you probably understood, where people could take my self-worth and step on it. And it would bother me. But what's really fun at this stage in life, they can't do that anymore. I'm free. I am free from them either liking me or hating me. Do you think that's important for what I do? Yeah, because really here's what happens when you do what I do. Way too many people like you too much and way too many people hate you too much. And you can't go with either one of them. You see, the bottom line is I better know why I'm important. And the only reason why I'm important is because there's a God of the universe who wants me and loves me. And I can respond to him. And as I do that, life has meaning. Now think of the tax code Christian thing you've read. It's a lot more complicated than that. Well, at my age, I'm telling you, it's not more complicated than that. That's it. I find great satisfaction with just staying home with Linda. In a human relationship. We don't have to do anything. Just, you know, yesterday was a cold day. I think she took the mail out and I got the mail. That was it. The rest of the day we're in the house, driving each other crazy. It was great. We enjoy that. You know, it's like, oh good, it's really, really, really cold. Let's be stranded in the house. And we were. See, there's something about just enjoying being with somebody. I could be a big baby because if I don't know where Linda is, I'll usually call for her and say, where are you? I'm like, I want you in the room I'm in. Yeah, fine. Come out, whatever she's doing in that room. I don't know. It's a bad habit. Why? I like having her around. That's all. You know, there's something, right, as much as she'll roll her eyes, she likes it. Because her husband's saying, you know, I really like having you around. I'm not saying you have to be where I can touch you. Just, I like having you around. I like having God around. I love being able to talk to him about whatever. I love knowing that he's limitless. I love knowing that he loves me and has a plan. And there's nothing that will ever happen to me that He doesn't orchestrate or control. I love leading this ministry and knowing that we are a step away from disaster if he does not provide. Because he has. And everybody in this room can look at all the buildings you're in and all the fact that we're still here, and you cannot see someone like myself who made it happen, because I cannot do that. But our Father can, and he has. And so every building begins to scream out God, and every bill that we pay screams out God, because there's no way that we can do that without him. And here's what I even know more. This place is more secure than any country, any place in the world, because it belongs to our King. Now, you say, so it'll never close. I didn't say that. The King can do what he wants with it. He might say, I accomplished what I want to, you're done. And he's got to do that somehow. Got to go bankrupt, got something. Something's got to change then. It's just like your life. At one point, he's going to say, you've had your life. I've told you that it's appointed on a man to live, and then after that, the judgment. Tomorrow's the judgment. So that's it. See, and somehow he's got to get you there. You're going to get hit by a bus. You're going to, you know what I mean, something. And we might all look at it and go, oh, what a disaster. And God's going, I had to pick something. You know, they're leaving. So one way or another, they're coming home. Well, God isn't mean because of that. That's just what he does. It's really cool being a part of what God does. Don't miss it. Don't do it yourself. All right, let's take a 5-minute break. Come on back then, and we'll start on the other